As always, even though that music comes from Two Guys Gaming, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series, I am reading and reacting to Dragons of Eternity, finally, woohoo! The latest Dragonlance novel by Margaret Weis and Tracy Hickman, closing out the Destina trilogy. I said finally because I took an unintended month-long hiatus. Things have been extremely busy with the start of school and Quinn also starting play, so I'm trying to get back on track to get this done by the third week in October. That way I can still deliver Mary Shelley's Frankenstein in October for Spooktober celebration and get back on track for the remainder of the year to finish out whatever I put on the show notes. I'll take a look at the show notes and I'll know better next time. As I mentioned in this episode, I'm going to start talking about Dragons of Eternity. I will do chapters 1-8. I'm going to try to do this one in 6 episodes. I proved that I could do it last time with the Poppy War, and this book is about 44 chapters long. I've split it up. You can hear a bird in the background. I split it up so that I can get it done in hopefully 6 episodes like I do this. Get it done in 6 episodes like I say, 2 this week, 2 next week, 2 the following week, and that'll give us the last 2 weeks of Spooktober to do Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and then get back on track with the remainder of the year. Sorry for the long introduction. Just wanted to explain myself. It's been a while since I've talked to myself, so I guess I have a lot to say. And now, without further ado, I will get to the summary of chapters 1-8. I will do my response, and then I will wrap it up. Dragons of Eternity, Chapter 1. Tanis arrives at the end of the last home. Happy to be back for several reasons. One of them is the color of the trees in autumn. He also left a contentious meeting of humans, elves, and dwarves. The usual of trade agreements gone sour when war isn't imminent. Tika greets him, and he lightly admonishes her for not resting. She waves him off. Any word from Taz, he asks. No, she replies, and gets in a dig at Destina. She then recounts that they went back in time to try to put things right back too late. She delivers his meal, forgets another, gets rescued by Caramon. Then he goes to get the fussy baby. After she brings the baby, a column of magical smoke appears in the room. Some scatter. Some rise to face the quote-unquote threat. Dalimar steps out of a portal and orders everyone but his friends out. He repeats the command to those who linger. Angry elves, mostly. Tika flips her lid on him. He ignores her and tells Dezra, the cook, to leave and take the children away. Tika, still furious, again threatens Dalimar. Caramon tries to calm her, imploring him to explain himself. He tells him that he needs to speak in private because he has dire news about Taz, about all of their friends. Straight from the book. I told you when I was here last that Destina Rosethorn and the Grey Gem went back in time with the device of time journeying and took Sturm and Raistlin and Tasselhoff with her. The device was destroyed, leaving them stranded in the time of the Third Dragon War. An artificer created a new device, and Brother Cairn, a monk of Astinus, went back to bring them home. But Chaos had other ideas, Dalimar continued grimly, and now history has been upended. To make a long and terrible story short, a traitor killed the Silver Dragon Gwyneth and assassinated Huma before they had a chance to fight Tachesis. The Dark Queen and her army seized the High Claris Tower, and Salamnia fell to her might. She soon conquered all other nations of Ancelana, and, after that, the world. Tika doesn't buy it. Caramon again asks her to listen. Dalimar wants Tanis. Caramon volunteers to come along as well. Dalimar implores him to stay with his family. Tanis asks Caramon's advice. He trusts Dalimar because of his history with Raistlin. Tanis goes back to his griffin for his belongings, and sends the beast back to his home. Before they leave, Tika asks if this is Taz's doing. Dalimar assures them that chaos reigns. They leave by magical means to meet Astinus. Tanis demands answers of the historian. Astinus calmly asks him to sit, because they wait for one more. Brother Cairn. They explain the dilemma to Tanis. Tachesis won the Third Dragon War and now rules. He is, understandably, incredulous. They will explain if he sits. Otherwise, he may leave. He sits. Chapter 2. Cairn, at Astinus' urging, shows Tanis the passage about the reunion before the War of the Lance. I know what happened. I was there. Please, read it. He does and slams the book shut. This is nonsense. No, time changed. Well, why can't I remember that? I remember us all there. The floodwaters rise slowly. Floodwaters? Astinus explains how the past has yet to catch up to the present. Okay, how do we fix this? The device of time traveling. Now, why me? Dalamar this time. We need you as bait. Takhesis is searching for the Grey Gem. He tells Tanis to read of the Lost War when Takhesis triumphs. While Tanis does, Dalamar needs Cairn's rucksack for a mission. He takes the bag and magically leaves. While the book radiates darkness and despair, Tanis reads nonetheless. Chapter 3. Dalamar casts a spell on the rucksack to hide the device. While testing the spell with an apprentice, the apprentice tells him that the gods of magic have summoned him. He figured as much and goes to meet them. You're aware of my meeting with Astinus? We know you met, but not what was said. Lunatari. We presume you spoke of the Grey Gem, New Atari, and that's why he kept it secret. Is the history accurate? Takhesis won and banished the gods? Maybe a mistake? No mistake. We saw it happen, and we see the rivers of time rushing at us. We have a plan. It offers hope, but forlorn because of Takhesis and her search. Well, we need to stop her. What can you tell me? Nothing. If we tell you, things may get worse. How could they possibly? Instead of banishment, she may kill us. They leave. Nuatari returns. You don't need my help. The answer is in the account. It's there. Or rather, not there. No more riddles! Sorry, I can tell you no more. Nuatari leaves again. Chapter 4. Tanis finishes reading. The last words. I put down my pen to take up my sword. He sees that Dalamar has returned. He gives Cairn the rucksack and explains the spell. He then goes on to explain the bait plan to Tanis. If they fool Takhesis into focusing on the heroes of the Lance, they can then work to set time right. Tanis scoffs and asks to return. Dalamar pushes a button by suggesting that Takhesis will not spare his wife due to her part in the defeat of the goddess. He has to talk to his wife. No can do. You'd put both yourself and her in danger. Okay, fine. How does this work? They explain the quantum leap style time travel. Tanis can't wrap his head around it. He also wonders aloud how they can possibly win a lost war. Astinus gives him a pep talk, and Dalamar mentions the there that wasn't there. For fuck's sake. Okay, fine. Tell Arana. Of course, says Astinus. And off into the river of time they go. Chapter 5. The device drops him on a familiar road at a familiar time with unfamiliar surroundings. The smoke is from logging camps. Takhesis' army cut the trees after burning the brush. That hammers it home for Tanis. What now? Cairn suggests they make their way to the inn. As they walk, Cairn explains more. Again, straight from the book. Dragon Highlord Verminard rules Abyssinia and regions to the west. His headquarters are in Pax Tharkas, so he can supervise the mining operations there. He rarely visits Abyssinia, but has placed his underling Highmaster Toad in charge. Toad, Tanis grimaced. I'd forgotten about that slimy hobgoblin. How did he get elevated to Highmaster? He was only a few master when I knew him. Verminard required slaves to work in the mines, and Toad supplied them. Verminard rewarded him by making him Highmaster. Toad has grown wealthy and powerful in his position, for he has teamed up with Hedrick the High Theocrat to run a criminal empire. Toad extorts people, demanding payment to keep them from being sent to the mines, while Hedrick sells religious artifacts that have supposedly been blessed by the Dark Queen. Up until now, no one has dared challenge either of them, for they have Verminard's backing. But now Kidiara's arrival has thrown Toad into a panic, for he fears she is here to take his job. And Kit, just the sound of her name sparks his memories. She's Dragon Highlord, headquarters in Salamnia. Why did we flee? You led the resistance, but got ambushed by Draconians and decided to lay low and search for evidence of the return of the gods. What of the others? Again, straight from the book. Sturm went to Salamnia to find his father and to assist in the uprising known as the Second Rose Rebellion. Raistlin traveled to the Tower of High Sorcery in Weyreth to take the test, and Caramon went with him. Flint sought refuge among the Hill Dwarves, and Tasselhoff sent out for Kindermore to find out what had become of his people. Kit refused to be a part of the worthless cause of the resistance. She went to join the Dark Queen. And me in this time? Again, from the book. You went home to Qualinesti for a time, but you were angered by the elves' refusal to fight the Dark Queen and you left. You grew a beard to hide your elven features, then spent the remaining years traveling Ancelon, helping where you could and searching for some sign of the return of the gods. What happened when I came back to Solus for the reunion? You were eventually captured and killed. They find Flint sitting alone on a boulder. He carved a piece of wood as he waited. At the sight of his departed friend, Tanis was thankful for the beard that hid his tears. When they approached, Flint jumped to his knees, axe at the ready. They embrace, exchange pleasantries. Tanis introduces Cairn. Flint fills them in on new intel. Kit betrayed them. Toad is on edge because Verminard blames him for the shit hitting the fan. Raist and Caraman work with Kit. Sturm, Flint shakes his head. Haven't heard from him. Then, as if a bit late for the cue, Toad and his cronies show up when they suggest traveling off the path. Toad doesn't recognize Tanis with the beard and demands they identify themselves. Tanis lies that they're looking for work. Toad asks about a blue crystal staff. Nope, haven't seen it. Can we go? Only after I search your packs. Flint jokes about traps in the packs, and the goblins ignore the order. Now can we go? First pay the toll. Cairn gives him coins, and Toad accuses him of counterfeit. When the coins pass the test, he lets them go. But I'll keep an eye on you. On to Solus. Even with Kit, we took an oath. They talk of the rumor of the blue crystal staff, and that it may be the omen of the return of the gods again. Flint scoffs, and they talk more about the alternate history. The elves appease Tachesis to keep her off their backs. The dwarves simply took refuge at Mount Thorbarden. There's a rustling in the bushes. Who goes there? I go there! An excited voice, followed by a kender with his hoopak. Flint, you're not dead! Taz hugs Flint and cries. Chapter 6. They exchange hellos, and Taz looks suspiciously at Cairn. I'm Cairn. But he wore gray robes. I changed. Where's Destina? Oh, I do know you. You took me back in time and lost one. I'm sorry. And you lost Sturm and Destina. I'm truly sorry. Where are they? Destina is with me, and we're both with Sturm. Destina thinks Sturm might be dying, so she sent me here to look for Raistlin. I know where he is, but can you take us to Destina and Sturm? Taz leads them. I couldn't find Raistlin, so I looked for Flint and Tanis. Waited there, and then there they were. You look like Tanis from the present, which is the future, or my past. What the fuck, Flint says? Tanis says he'll explain later. Taz returns Flint's knife as a gift. He mentions that Destina may have been poisoned as well. She thinks everything got messed up because of chaos. Grey Gem, Cairn explains. Flint, shocked, demands to know more. Taz starts to tell him, but Tanis asks him to go ahead. Tanis says he'll explain in due time, but for now, they need to tend to Sturm. Along the way, they see the inn. Tanis thinks of the night of the reunion and the missing constellations. When they arrive at the mill house, the door opens. Destina runs out to embrace Cairn. Good to know love still survives in this world, Flint remarked, his gruff tone softening. Tachesis can't stamp that out, although I have no doubt she would if she could. Love has always been our best hope, Tanis agrees. Again, straight from the book, I just really like that passage. Once inside, they see that Sturm is indeed in bad shape. Cairn explains the shift to chaos time, and they all feel horrible about their part in it. But it's the Grey Gem. Tanis asks about Sturm to change the subject. Destina explains. She says he was stabbed in the chest while he was trying to save Huma. He's lost a lot of blood, and he's burning up with fever. He was delirious before he sank into the stupor. She also talks about how the Staff of Magius worked on its own to save Raistlin and them. During the conversation, Tanis mentions dragonlances. Cairn makes the connection. That's it. That's the answer. They need to know if they exist and how to get them. As Tanis gets to know Destina, he realizes her ordeal has changed her. He finds her likable, in spite of what he heard from Tika. They find Flint and ask him about dragonlances. He says there's no such weapon. Since they need to find Gold Moon and Raistlin, it's off to the inn. But they need to be careful. Kit, Bozax, and Raistlin all work for the Dark Queen now. Chapter 7. Tanis, Flint, and Taz go to the inn. Flint makes the comment that Tachesis lights the bright sky to make it easier to spy on them. He again asks what's going on. Tanis says he wouldn't believe him if he tried. So Taz is telling the truth about me being dead. Yes, but you died a hero. Taz comes back and informs them that he made it to the inn and talked to Tika. Kit is there and asks Tika about Tanis. Tika says she hasn't heard or seen. Fine. I'll wait, Kit says. Chapter 8. They pause to assess the situation. Two Bozaks guard the door. Humanoids created by corrupting bronze dragon eggs. Employed by Kit as guards. A man approaches to ask about Tanis and his friends. The Bozaks give him a hard time, and he leaves. They, Taz, Tanis, and Flint, walk to the inn. They plan to sneak in and out with Goldmoon. There's a trapdoor in the kitchen that they used before, well, in the before that no longer exists. Taz calls up to Tika, who greets them and tells them that Goldmoon and Riverwind are there, but there's no staff. Also, a wizard in gray robes. Fizban! Tanis will sneak in the back. Flint and Taz will go through the front. They're with Kitiara. Their names are on the list. What a crazy plan. It just might work. And now for my initial thoughts. One of the things that makes Weiss and Hickman great is that they just write this story. No initial background necessary. No or little additional homework required. Tanis shows up at the end. A bit of quote-unquote slice of life before dropping Dalimar the Dark Elf into the middle of it all. Any background gets told in the context of the story. So if I've forgotten anything, and you know I did, that I get a reminder without having to do any work. Additionally, they don't disrupt the flow of the story with unnecessary information. Just a quick paragraph or two, told from the perspective of the characters. Seemingly a simple thing, but it makes a huge difference in the quality of the story. I never read Game of Thrones, but I imagine some of it is just pages of history or genealogy information that may or may not affect the plot. Don't get me wrong, I'm not hating. It's just not my bag when it comes to storytelling. So the opening chapters did their job. They hooked me on the story and left me wanting more. I got a reminder of what happened previously, a few surprises along the way. I started this series wondering if Weiss and Hickman lost their Dragonlance magic. In the last book, I saw it return. This book makes me realize it was there all the time. I just fell into the same habits as other nerd fandoms. And yes, some of the magic exists because they brought back the old characters. I won't deny that as I get older, nostalgia takes more of a hold on me. But that part of it is minor. They work to develop Destina's character, parenthetically, more on that in a bit, and parenthetical. They brought to life some of the most iconic characters in the history of Kryn, parenthetically, hopefully more on that later, and parenthetical. So given the total package, I'm all in on this book. Going to be a hell of a lot of fun. World building. Most of the world building came over the last 30 years of novels, games, and other supplementary materials. I'm sure the same can be said for other campaigns, parenthetically, except maybe Dark Sun, unless there's a fan update in parenthetical. But Kryn is a living, breathing, thriving world. Oh, wait a minute. Before I go on, I just found a page online, parenthetically via Reddit, in parenthetical, that updates Dark Sun for 5e. I love you, fellow nerds. Now back to Kryn. So when they mention the Cataclysm, Towers of High Sorcery, or Draconian, I know exactly what they mean. Furthermore, if they need to explain these things to new readers, they have a plethora of source material from which to do that. It all makes the story that much more enjoyable, because it just becomes part of the story. As an added bonus in this book, they rebuild the world according to the altered timeline. Like Tanis, I knew as soon as they mentioned the logging camps that things were bad in Chaos Time. I mean, you can assume, but you might also make the assumption that Takhesis might eventually realize her minions are like locusts and devour everything with no remorse, or maybe she just gets bored and stops paying attention to the stupid world. But it looks like she just wants control, even if nothing exists to control when all is said and done. Maybe that's the future that Rannikar saw with the desolate planet ruled over by the massive dragon. Seems obvious now. Maybe a little too obvious. In any case, I look forward to seeing how things continue to change. Also, how do the heroes fix history? I commend them for taking a 30-plus-year-old IP and making it fresh and new. If anyone out there is listening, this is how you do one of these types of stories. New characters. The quote-unquote new characters are all familiar to fans of Dragonlance. We already heard and maybe even met Tanis at some point in the series, but he gets bumped up to main character status in this book. As a result, we also get introduced to Flint Fireforge. Other than by name and reputation, this is our first experience with Flint. He doesn't disappoint. While obviously affected deeply by Takhesis' rule and the darkness of Chaos Time Kryn, he still offers some lighthearted moments and laughs. I called Flint and Taz the R2 and 3PO of Dragonlance. We get some of that dynamic at the end of this section. I have no doubt that they'll offer even more through the rest of the book. They're too much fun to keep them bottled up for too long. The others are Toad, Verminard, and Kitiara. Other than Toad, who gets an entire interaction with the heroes, the others simply get the name and rep intro. However, based on how the section ended, I think that Kit becomes much more of a central figure in the story very soon. Character development. Not much in terms of character development. Since we're only 8 chapters and 60 pages in, I already talked some about how they subtly changed Flint's character to reflect the Dower history. Dower history? I think it's Dower history. That resulted because of Takhisis' victory. But you'd only know that if you're already a fan and read the other books. More likely, before you read this book, you read the other books in the series. So let's focus on the development of the main players involved in this section. I mean Karen, Taz, and Destina. I tend to discuss them by how much their character has changed from first meeting them. Karen started as an acolyte in the library with Astinus. Destina uses him, parenthetically, and Taz, in parenthetical, to her own ends. You wouldn't normally think that leads to a love that Flint admires, but Cupid works in mysterious ways and all. Actually, Destina showed true contrition for her actions, parenthetically, more on her in a bit, in parenthetical, and Karen immediately thought her attractive. When her inner beauty started to approach her outer beauty, he fell in love. They also survived several harrowing experiences. Facing death, I've heard, tends to enhance emotions. Even so, the emotion needs to be there already. Like Flint, Taz's character change is subtle. Unlike Flint, it's mainly because of his race and personality. Kender, parenthetically, no doubt a nod to the German for kid, and parenthetical, or free-spirited and afflicted, parenthetical, not the word I want, but I can't think of a better one right now, and parenthetical, with a strong curiosity and wanderlust. This curiosity often gets them in trouble. Their innocence and tendency to try nearly anything often gets them out of that trouble. So like a child who suffers loss, they mourn. But they temper that mourning with an attitude that everything will turn out okay. Ted has suffered great losses, and he mourns those losses. But he also remembers the good things about that which he lost, and deals with the loss in a healthy way. So on the outside, he looks like the same fun-loving adventurous Taz, and mostly that's who he is. Besides, in spite of, parenthetically, or maybe because, in parenthetical, of it all, he understands the importance of life, love, and truth. Moreover, he understands the importance of his presence in the lives of others. I put Destina last because I think she changed the most. I still think that, but after all this, Taz is a close second. Speaking of the importance and influence of Taz, he went a long way to changing Destina's mind and heart. She started this journey as selfish and demanding. Typical quote-unquote spoiled. Parenthetical, listen to episode 2 or 3 of the Poppy Ward for my thoughts on that. And parenthetical, princess, willing to use anyone and anything to accomplish her goal. Admittedly, that goal is trying to prevent her father from dying. So, I guess I can understand on some level. Still, she pissed me off in that first book. I thought maybe the series isn't for me. Maybe I need to go back to the old stories. Now that I've read the book, it reminds me of Ren and the Poppy War. Destina isn't pro-genocide, but the same selfishness drove her. Adventuring with Taz and then Karen, she changed her tune. It's how we get such varied opinions of her, from Tika's disgust to Tanis' understanding and even admiration. Those represent my range of emotions about Destina, from the one extreme to the other. Like I said in the Poppy War, I don't mind an unlikable protagonist, but it A, takes me a while to get used to them, and 2, if they stay unlikable, I want to know. Neither applies for Destina, but I enjoyed and appreciate her journey and transformation. The next series tells Huma and Magius' story, parenthetically, something I asked for in parenthetical, but I hope someone takes Destina's story and adds to it. Maybe I will. I haven't written fanfiction for a couple of years. Pacing. Overall, I think they paced the story well so far. They focus on only one party of characters. That can sometimes bog down a story, because you get sick of reading about the same characters. Not an issue here. Characters are interesting. Plus, they split up often enough to make the interactions between the characters fun and engaging. I enjoy that part of the narrative. The only quote-unquote complaint I have about the pacing is that the setup took a little too long for my taste. I understand what they wanted to do. Tanis went back and forth with his decision. They introduced Toad as a way to show how much things changed, introduced Flint, got the party together, and then set off on the adventure. But I'd be lying if I didn't think once or twice, come on already, let's get to the good stuff. I suppose you could spin that as a good way of building anticipation. Maybe I did get it wrong then. And now for what I liked least. Other than that minor pacing issue, it's a struggle to think of something that I didn't like. I know that sounds like fanboy talk, and it might be. Honestly, I meant it when I said this is how you do these kinds of stories. You pay homage to the older characters by letting them shine. Plus, you incorporate the new characters into the mix. And now for what I liked best. Rocky did a good job with Creed. I know people disagree, but I thought Star Wars did okay too. Star Wars quote-unquote fans are just the worst. Ever since nerd culture became pop culture, nerds used their power to bully and intimidate. it's the worst version of role reversal. Naturally, though, the franchise that did it best, parenthetically until now, was Scream. I mean, I love Scream anyway, so of course I'd say that. But in the middle of the stupid horror film, they honestly have a love for cinema and pay homage to movies. I'd have to rewatch the movies again, but I think the Dragonlance now maybe did it better. Let's consider it in the context of what people think Star Wars did wrong. I don't agree, but I can pretend for the sake of this exercise. Most of the complaints I heard were that they dishonored the memory of the original trilogy characters. Luke becomes a hermit on a distant, desolate planet. Han gets killed in a manner not befitting a hero of his status. Two good critiques that I will address while contrasting with what Dragonlance does differently. Let's start with Han. Kylo Ren stabs him with his lightsaber, parenthetically spoiler alert, and kills him. I don't disagree. An inglorious end for one of the greatest heroes in the Star Wars universe. Plus, he went back to his former life of smuggler. I like the story in the Thrawn books better. Hey, I agree with you there. Those books are pretty incredible. Why they reinvented the wheel instead of building on those, I'll never understand. But they did. They took some big swings with the characters in their story. I give them credit for that. And besides, even though I spoiled Han's death for myself, it still shocked me when it happened. I gasped audibly when it happened. I'm telling you, if the story is good, then spoilers don't matter. And honestly, this story wasn't all that good. Two more things before I talk about the book. First, while Han's death was quick, it wasn't entirely meaningless. Oedipus, at least, watched with interest. Kidding. But I only said that because I don't know the myth when you kill your father but don't want to fuck your mom. Now about Luke the Hermit. Yeah, you have a point there, too. They sacrificed his story in service of Kylo Ren. But if someone made the point, the actors are old. They can no longer carry the franchise. They need to move on. And to their credit, both of Luke's mentors became hermits. So, in that context, it makes sense. Plus, nerd to nerd, we need to learn how to move on too, guys. Also, to their credit, they eventually redeem him in one of the best scenes in the trilogy. I say again, Star Wars quote-unquote fans are the worst. Ever since nerd culture became pop culture, like I said before, most of us just can't handle the power of the zeitgeist. We gatekeep, complain endlessly, and just give ourselves a bad name in general. As always, I keep hoping that things turn around. There's some indication that the tide is shifting. However, progress is always slow and so easily undone. I lost the thread some, but I think the point always needs to be made until things get better. For now, back to the book, and let's finally finish this episode. Once again, apologize it took so long. I always forget how hard the start of the school year hits. For what it's worth, I think I figured out a rhythm for the pages. I just need to figure out the YouTube and the streaming schedule, and more consistency with the Instagram. It's all on my list. I will get there sooner rather than later. Okay, now I'll talk about the book. Hey, you know what you get here. Decent analysis, and frequent disruptions due to my undiagnosed ADHD. Besides, the digressions rarely have nothing to do with the topic at hand. Instead, they usually provide some context to the discussion. That's why I brought up the quote-unquote requels, parenthetically, love that portmanteau and parenthetical, a term coined by the aforementioned Scream franchise. Because that's what this book feels like. I already talked in the other books for the series about how one of their goals with the story is to rehabilitate Raceland, perhaps give him a better ending. So, while they used OG characters in the other two books, this comes closer to the style of the recent run of requels. Before, the characters find themselves in completely new situations. While the Chaos Time alters history, the characters still follow their same general attitudes and behaviors. We recognize Flint as Flint because of his gruff demeanor and his heart of gold. Kid is ambitious above all else, but still curious about Tannis and wants to meet. They're setting it up as a reunion, but I think that's going to be misdirected. This time around, she benefits from the upper hand due to Takhesus' victory in the Third Dragon War. I will get to that in a moment. For now, I hope I made my case. What's next? Introduced in the Poppy War series, that thought about Kit made me want to run it back. Let's start with Kit and Tannis. I said they seem to be setting it up as a rendezvous. At the very least, quote-unquote, hey, how are things? Maybe they notice some feelings still there. I admit that I thought the same. Maybe I'm the only one, but I'll play it off in the DJT style. Many people are saying that Kit and Tannis still pine for each other, in spite of her allegiance to the Dark Queen and his status as a wanted man. The forbidden love. Okay, sorry. Back to the point. As I ponder that, it felt more and more ridiculous. Whether Weiss and Hickman preyed on my romantic side, or I willingly gave in to that interpretation, I now think that's all wrong. Yes, they shared a romantic past, but they've grown. Besides, even in the actual timeline, Kit's loyalty supersedes her feelings for Tanis. She's not going to risk her position for puppy love. Instead, this meeting serves to get the principal characters together. They also need to show just how much things have changed. The key to all of this, Raistlin. It's the Raistlin from this series who never dealt with Fist and Dantalus's and the corruption. Yes, he and Caramon work with Kit, but that's all a secret op by Raistlin to keep tabs on her. And Caramon does exactly what Raistlin says. The companions met, after all, to once again topple Takhesis. I've already said before that I think Raistlin gets a hero send-off finally. It looks, as long as they don't kill one of them, that Destina and Karen end up together. That all but guarantees a happy ending. If nothing else, Weiss and Hickman will come through there. As to how they quote-unquote fix time, your guess is as good as mine. I said I was jealous because writing with the Force of Chaos gives them license to go bonkers. I think this qualifies. Maybe the next set of chapters will offer more clues. Now for my final thoughts. A little bit slow on the build, but now that we've gotten here, I don't think they'll let up until the end. Are the gods dead or in hiding? How did quote-unquote fix time gone so awry? Do any of our heroes die? How will we survive until next year without new Dragonlance books? Come back next episode for a chance of the answer to these questions and more. As always, thanks for listening. You can find us if you haven't already at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I did a couple articles this week, one article on gaming and mental health. They got a little bit of traction on Instagram. Ultimately, they just wanted my money, though, so I did not follow through with it. But somebody was going to feature me on their Instagram, and I'm not ready to spend money on this page just yet, other than what I've already spent. Speaking of spending money, somebody found the webpage through the podcast, and they sent me some stuff about finding sponsorships. But again, it's $200 a month. Like, that's just a huge ask right now. So, I mean, I'm getting some traction at least, which is good. If anybody out there, like, if you enjoy it, if you love the page, if you like the podcast, tell your friends. Come see us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, starting next month. Yeah, I had to postpone it again. I apologize. I will be back with this series at some point this week so that I can get it done and move on to Frankenstein in Spooktober. I'll talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are...